Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ROH Review Interviews. I'm your host, three-time pro wrestling author Oliver Newman, and unfortunately, my co-host, Stephen Jackson, can't be here today. But I am delighted to be joined by the manager of champions, ROH World Tag Team Champions, the American Wolves and the Kings of Wrestling, Adam Pearce as the NWA Heavyweight Champion, and Eddie Edwards as the TV champion, and the second ever and longest reigning ROH top of the class trophy winner, Shane Hagedorn. How are you doing today, Shane?
I'm wonderful. Bright and early over here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Doing
well. Thank you.
Very good. It's definitely bright and early for Shane, because when I checked the time difference, I was like 1 p.m. equals 9 a.m. in the USA. And then I Googled it and it was 8 a.m. And I was like, oh, Shane, my time difference is a little bit off. Can you do this a little bit earlier? And I was all set up ready to go at 8 a.m. And Shane's like, oh, wow, this guy is actually, you know, come early as opposed to being late, which is obviously a terrible thing to do in wrestling. So, yep, you can always count on me to be early.
I was up and ready anyway. I had to drop my son off at school, so.
You was. We got a time frame and stuff, actually. I was going to stick to my time frame, so I will time, Shane.
Sounds good.
Yeah, 1 second. I'm being run by my father. That's always good. He just doesn't know when things are happening. 1 second. Okay, we got an hour to play with, and yeah, after the introduction, we kind of go from there. So let's go all the way back to the beginning, and like I said to you off, Shane, was going to do a straight up Q&A, but I don't think that's as interesting as it could be, so I'm just going to talk about topics and allow you to talk, because that's what people want to hear. They don't want
to
hear me. Okay, so... watching ROH as a fan from 2002 until you joined the training school, what brought you to ROH as a show, as a fan? We'll just go with that one straight away.
So I don't remember exactly when I discovered it. I'm 40 years old, so I was there for, you know, the death of WCW and the death of ECW. And there was a little bit of like an independent wrestling scene in Michigan, where I'm originally from. Mm-hmm. And would, you know, see, you go to shows here and there. And it was just, I guess, you know, Ring of Honor kind of stepped up, I suppose, to fill the one of the companies that stepped up, to fill that void. Mm-hmm. I started reading about it. Through different reviews, different websites, Ransylvania, the Smarks, 411, what was the dude's name? Black Tiger, Rolling Germans, were like the reviews and whatnot. And I did a lot of tape trading. And so I just started tape trading for the VHSs, and kind of, I think, let me say, probably like the first like six or so shows, and then they, Ring of Honor came about two and a half hours away from where I lived and to Dayton, Ohio, for the Wrath of the Racket show that was in August of 2003.
Yeah.
And for me, the draw was Ring of Honor, and mm-hmm. there was a few people on there, obviously, that I knew, like I had seen outside of watching Ring of Honor tapes. I had seen CM Punk a few times live on indie shows, Cabana, mm-hmm. Jimmy mm-hmm. Jacobs. And so I convinced a friend to go with me based on the fact that he was a big Jim Cornette. And it's just funny to me, coincidence, considering how my entire Ring of Honor career would go. So I got a friend to come down with me based on the fact that Jim Cornette was on the show. And we drove down. I think I harassed the office that I would eventually end up working in like four or five times a week, making sure I was going to be able to get tickets, and they weren't going to sell out, and I had to get tickets, you know, little me being under the impression that Ring of Honor was a much bigger entity than it actually was in terms of office and scope. And so we drove down, and on all of the seats and at the merch table, there were flyers for the wrestling school opening soon. Just very vague. Wrestling school opening soon under CM Punk. And I just, that day, decided that when the school opens, I'm going to go. At that time, I was working as a videographer for my local news station, doing a lot of sports, heavy stuff. I graduated college and finished college as a promise to my mom. Because in 1998, I wanted to drop out and go to the Shawn Michaels Wrestling Academy in Texas. So I think it would have ended up putting me in the same class as, like, Brian Danielson. I think I would have ended up in, like, the same wrestling class as him if I would have done it then.
Yeah.
But I agreed to get my degree. So, you know, fast forward to 2003, get that flyer. They make the announcement in October when they were going to do tryouts. So I drove out to Langhorne, Pennsylvania for the tryout. There were like 8 or 10 people there doing the tryout. First person I met was the man who would eventually be my roommate and is still one of my best friends to this day, the Evan Starsmore. And did a grueling, grueling tryout. And then with a couple weeks, with maybe a week or two later, got the notification of when the school was officially going to start. I believe it was supposed to be November 3rd. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, all right, gave my like week and a half notice at my job. And on November 1st, me and my dad packed up all my stuff and headed off to PA without a place to live.
Oh, wow. You've actually gone into like the next series of questions or topics. So
yeah,
just going back to your fandom for a second, obviously that's the show you went to. But was there an ROH match or moment that you watched as a fan that said, I need to be in that ring as an ROH wrestler?
Man. Just watching that first show is equal parts brutally painful and mind-blowingly awesome. Because that first segment that feels as if it will never end with going on the bus trip and the bad, you know.
Oh, I love the filters. Bus trip stuff, to be fair,
it's so brutal with the hit squad.
Yeah,
it's rough.
I like that.
It's like one of those, like, it's fun to see.
Yeah,
but then it just keeps going and going and going, and it's so much. But then you get into that first, we'll go with how they love to bill it and how it's presented on the Honor Club. Since they chose to edit out certain things involving the Christopher Street connection on most of the old stuff that's on the Honor Club. That Jay Briscoe and Amazing Red match. It was the equivalent to the first ECW I saw, which was Living Dangerously 99. Okay. And like just seeing it for the first time, and it was just like, this exists. Because it took that, like the super crazy Tajiri and RVD Jerry Lynn that I saw on that show, and this was the next level of that. And then the main event of that match with the three way with Chris Daniels, Low Key, and American Dragon, and then it just kept going, and into Round Robin Challenge, and all of the matches involved in the Round Robin Challenge, and then getting to the four-way for the world title, or for the title at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
At crowning a champion. And it just, it was as if there was always stuff on the shows that was not to my liking, but there were enough things on there that it was just like, I would just watch the tapes over and over again.
Yeah.
And so I don't think it was one specific match, but it was just the product as a whole and the type of wrestling it presented. the RVD, Jerry Lynn, Super Crazy Tajiri, but also going back to the things that kept me watching WCW. You know, I went to WCW because my friend said, oh my God, Diesel and Razor Ramon are on this other wrestling show that I didn't know existed.
Yeah.
But what kept me watching were the Guerreros, the Cruiserweights, yeah. Guerrero, Malenko, Jericho, Benoit, and even the character of Raven, like, held my interest, and that's actually what led me to watching any ECW in the first place. And it was all kind of that same vibe of this is the wrestling that I enjoy the most.
Yeah.
And that's what sucked me into Ring of Honor was that presentation of that style of wrestling more than anything.
Okay. So you said about the tryout being brutal at the ROH Wrestlers goal. There's got to be a story there.
Well, so there were the four of us that lived together, two other people that were actually made it. And then there were, somewhere between two to four additional people who never actually made the cut for whatever reason. But it was, I literally quit smoking after 10 years that week. And I'd been doing, you know, my fair share of preparing of what I thought it might be. And I had no clue.
Yeah.
But get there and it's, all right, go run. Just go run. There's no time. Just go run. Running for like a half an hour. And it's like, all right, everybody stand in a circle and we're going to do 300 squats. Okay, and then it was, you know, 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups. And all right, we're done. And we're all like dead. And it just at the getting back to my hotel afterwards and crawling up the stairs because I was at the Red Roof Inn around the corner from where the tryouts were, and my room was on the second floor, and I was on my hands and knees crawling up the stairs because I could not lift my legs enough after doing all of it to actually walk like a normal person. It was brutal. It was rough. And but at the same time, as we were standing there, because at that point, the Ring of Honor school was inside a giant warehouse and with plenty of like space to run indoors or do sprints and a high ceiling. And just sitting there doing these things, and the ring is right there. So I'm just like staring at the ring. This would continue on for months until we actually got in the ring properly.
Yeah.
It became this like object of desire, I suppose. That was the end game. That was the goal. Just to do enough of this torture to get in there to do what I really want to be doing. Because at that point, I hated the working out part of it, but I loved being in the ring so much.
Yeah. And
probably my downfall in a lot of ways, but in certain aspects. But it was once we got in there, that was the goal. Just suffer through all these squats, push-ups, sit-ups, sprints, all of that so we can get in the ring.
Fair enough. You mentioned earlier CM Punk was the trainer at the ROH Wrestling School. What was CM Punk like as a person back then and as a trainer?
I remember him telling us he would not be a drill sergeant about it, and he wasn't. He was with my class, he was very hands-on. There were ultimately six of us. Four of us lived together, and then two who lived elsewhere just that drove in, which kind of also made for that, you know, motivating each other, because the four of us lived together. We literally did like absolutely everything together. We ate together. We went to all the did the shows together, traveling. But as a trainer, he was very. He was involved, and you know, you hear a lot of stories of trainers not being so involved or having like a second to do the work for them and who do, you know, drills with us. Sometimes the warm ups with us. It was a rough, it ended up being a little bit of a rough start because at the same time he was hurt. In fact, our initial was supposed to start November 3rd and his knee was banged up and we ended up getting pushed back till right before Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Of 2003. Mm-hmm. And then he was also doing the NWA TNA Impact tapings at their, not an Impact, just NWA TNA, the weekly pay-per-view tapings. And so that scheduling was fun. And there were times where it felt like we were there like one day a week. But it was, I never felt like I was like lacking anything. You know, it just, it was a lot of conditioning.
Yeah.
And that was the big thing, was making, he always looked at us as you, as my students, as my kids are representing me once you get in the ring. So I want to make sure that you look competent when you finally get in that ring. And when you finally start going out and doing shows. Because, I mean, it was 11 months, almost 11 months of training before we had our first matches.
Yeah.
And I mean, we did a lot in that time frame. Going to the shows to help out with the crew, the ring crew, and learn that whole aspect of it.
Yeah.
Some Samoa Joe. Our first time actually in the ring was like shoot wrestling with Samoa Joe and Punk. It wasn't even like pro wrestling training. It was get in the ring. We're gonna roll around with Joe. It's like what? Okay. All right. And then we're doing like Les Thatcher and Ricky Steamboat seminar. Through a Jersey Championship Wrestling was, I think, is where that was ended up being held, and just getting the feel for like the locker room, and just it was a lot going on. And then I ended up in February of 2004, ended up getting a job actually working in the office.
Okay.
So then I got this whole other level of experience from it as well.
Yeah.
Is when my background as a videographer paid off, because they needed somebody to, you know, be a videographer for like the random indie shows that they were selling the tapes for at the time, like the old ECWA shows or Jersey All Pro shows or 01 USA shows. And so I would go and record those as well.
Very good. You're actually reading the notes off my paper, I think, because that's a question to come later in the interview. you touched on it there. You debuted at the Midnight Express reunion afternoon show. What were your thoughts and feelings before, during, and after this match?
Man, it was anxious. Excited and then calm, I guess, because through the training, I knew that we knew what we were doing.
Okay.
Know, as far as like your most basics, you know, doing a headlock takeover and your, you know, the essentials, I knew we had a solid foundation of all that stuff. But I still remember like the prep work of the going to the tanner and we're putting on self tanner and getting our first gear. And we were, Punk had for both my class and the subsequent class, cause he only had the two. But we kind of went the Japanese young boy route of everybody wearing just all black and earning your colors more or less.
Okay.
So I had the straight black singlet and just being very happy and excited to be there. And simultaneously knowing, okay, I also have to film the show, because going back a little bit in June of 2004, when there was the big official split between Ring of Honor and the video company that I that was the original owners. I then became the second floor cameraman with World Title Classic.
Okay.
So with June, I now was working at the merch table. I was like setting up training, setting up the shows, working the merch table, filming the shows, and now I can add wrestling on the shows to to this as well from time to time, because we didn't start consistently doing pre-shows or dark matches until the next year when the second class graduated.
And they say men can't multitask there, Shane.
I know, and that's that's all I've ever, I feel like that's all I've ever done since I started wrestling. But like that day of, I don't know, it was it's kind of a blur. It's nice because the National Guard Armory in Philly is like 10 minutes from my house. Mm-hmm. So it was a nice easy drive. And that's the biggest concern I had that day was I don't have a name. It's a spoiler alert. Shane Hagener is not my my legitimate birth name. But I didn't have a name. And I had two things in my head of which one I was going to choose. Shane Hagedorn or Nathan Summers.
I think you chose correctly.
Yeah, well, happy coincidence. My son's name is Nathan.
Okay.
And the way I chose, the way I made my final decision was I asked Cheech and Cloudy, Cheech of Special K. I don't have a name. These are my choices. What are you thinking? I tell him. He says Nathan. I'm like, all right, going the other way then. The other fun coincidence is when I used to do eFed wrestling on my computer years prior, Shane Hagedorn was also my eFed wrestler name. So if anybody listening ever worked in an eFed with a Shane Hagedorn, it was me.
So like going on that kind of route, did you ever play like Extreme Warfare Revenge and stuff?
Oh, hell yes. That game was great. Loved it. I know it's because you have a video. I so wish there was a mobile version of that.
Yeah.
Because it was so much fun.
Yeah.
It was tons of fun. And that was like my favorite part of any of the WWE games, Raw versus SmackDowns or anything that had like a cool GM mode that you could do.
Yeah.
Because that was more fun than like just playing matches in those games. It's fun creating your territory.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the last time I took on Extreme Warfare Revenge, I demoted John Cena to NXT. And then, I don't know if I demoted him because like they're all three brands, aren't they? They're all on the same level. Yeah, and then you realize I don't really have the time to play this anymore. It's very, very long. It was really cool.
Like a year ago, I found like updates that were modern, and I downloaded them to my computer. And I'm like, and I think I played it like once that day, and it's probably still sitting on my hard drive.
Yeah, exactly. It's a time for when you just have a lot of time, and when you grow up, you kind of don't.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like, definitely. I can play Fire Pro for 10 minutes today. Sweet.
Definitely for all those teenagers that get Extreme Warfare Revenge.
Yes.
Okay. So, moving forward from there, that was your afternoon show debut. You had a main show debut on the weekend of Thunder Night One.
Yes. Me and Davey Andrews against the Outcast Killers. And the thing I remember the most from that is meeting Liger. That's the thing.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Liger.
And it's crazy to think that I had met Muda like a year prior to that, and that dude was a chain smoker. I just remember Muda sitting on the bleachers just puffing away in the middle of the National Guard Armory without a care in the world. And then, meeting Liger for the first time and not realizing that's who I was sitting here standing next to because he was completely, out of costume.
Yeah.
And then, because he was... When I first got my 700th generation copies of the J Crowns and the 93 and 94 J Cups, and he was one of the ones that captured me, captured my attention, like him and then when I got to see the Dynamite Kid Tiger Mask stuff, but like him and I still, to this day, have a giant man crush on Shinjiro Otani. Like, one of my favorites of that era, and like Super Delphin, and just, and so getting to be on the same show as Liger was really cool.
Yeah, and that, you got the best theme music in pro wrestling.
Oh yeah. Followed second, big number two to Minoru Suzuki's theme as well.
Okay.
Having that, experiencing that one live is super cool. When you get the whole crowd singing along, and you get a whole bunch of Americans singing along to it. Songs all in Japanese. But yeah, that's like the standout thing, like, of that. It's like the match, I remember doing it, and half thinking we don't belong on a main show, but cool. And then the fun part was, any of my matches that were like on a main show, or even dark matches up to a point, I'm never the one who takes the finish, because I have to go back out there to film the rest of the show. And then in the early matches, they're always Gabe saying like, Davey gets one bit of offense and takes the finish. So I get like, I get no offense, but I don't have to take the finish either, because I have to go film.
They got to protect you, Shane. That's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
You're in a big title run.
Yeah.
So, yeah, once again, you're reading off my notes. So, I'll go back to this for a second. So what was the difference between debuting on the afternoon show and the main show in terms of like your nerves and things of that nature?
Oh, there are definitely far more nerves about being on like the main show. Yeah. I think there was like this weird calm that I had that first match.
Mm-hmm.
And I think back on it, the times that I had like crazy nerves weren't a lot. Okay. And it wasn't, I've heard people, if you don't have those butterflies, you should quit. But that wasn't it for me. It was just, I don't know, like a calm confidence in some ways. Because then there was another part of me that had no confidence whatsoever. But I guess it depended on the position I was in. Having a main show one was definitely far more nerve-wracking that first time.
And then when...
Even when we had like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
They had screw up in 3 minutes.
When you talk about like the training and stuff, the excitement you had to be in the ring, so I could imagine in terms of your calmness and stuff, you just wanted to be in the ring. So the nerves would be there, but it'd be like, oh, I'm going to be in an ROH ring. So I can understand from what you've said so far that you would be already kind of thing.
Well, and I look back on it now, 15, 16 years later, and I can see, realistically, we were nothing more than walking advertisements for, come to the school, because look, you can be on a Ring of Honor DVD in a live event for 3 minutes getting squashed, but it was still, it's that exposure and putting your name out there, and also for them, and the source of advertisement for the school. But man, we didn't belong on main shows. We didn't have the experience level or the, we were these very, very green kids wrestling on the same show as, as Brian Danielson and Jushin Liger and Samoa Joe and Low Ki and Homicide. And what the heck are we doing here? We do not belong on this. We should be on a dark matches or something at best, But man, the first month, I think I sat down and figured it out one day, just not really. Yeah, but I think on my first month, I had like 8 matches in the first month. Because I went from that first match, and then the next week I worked on an indie, some farmer's market in Pennsylvania, and then we went to IWA Mid-South and did 4 shows in a row, and came back and did another Ring of Honor show, which the weekend of Thunder shows, and then the next weekend was another show at that farmer's market. So it was like in that first month, like a really heavy dose of different levels of wrestling, as well as my first experiences of being promised money that does not show up. I know I promised you $40 a night for 4 days, but here's $40 for all 4 days.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
So, from you reading my notes, I'm not sure how you can do it from there, but you've managed it. You said about like wrestling dark matches. Kind of talk us through like the dark match, from a wrestler's perspective.
So the dark matches didn't really start until July of 2005, mm-hmm. when the second class, and that would have been Telly Primo, Bobby Dempsey, Derek Dempsey, Smash Bradley. Their class, because when we did, that was the day of the homecoming, and we did another kind of afternoon, like dark, for those guys to have their first matches, and that was kind of the start of having consistent, almost every single show, some sort of dark match. And I remember myself and Davey Andrews. Whenever I say Davey, people, I have to remember, I have to clarify, Davey Andrews and Davey Richards, because Davey Andrews, who was one of my fellow graduates with my class that quit wrestling at Final Battle 2005, we kind of like put together to try and give a format or a structure. And this is just me and him, like, you know, just figuring this out on one of our many drives. And putting together like a structure or a format to the dark matches, so they had a purpose.
Yeah.
Because we knew we were getting this top of the class trophy. Like, I know Gabe had brought it up to us, and he had this kind of like loose format of how he was going to do it. And so we kind of structured out these dark matches and to make sense of, to give the matches a purpose. So they weren't just these random matches. Like, okay, well, all right, cool. Well, you win three matches, then you get a shot at the trophy. Or you pin the guy who's the trophy holder in a tag match, and you get a shot at the trophy. Mm-hmm. And the second weekend of dark matches, that all went right out the window. the weekend of Redemption and Punk, the final chapter, when Gabe took Pelly out of the dark match we had booked and put him on the show to just get like elbow punched by Chad Collier or something. Took him out of a match for a spot that was like 2 seconds. We'll do what we can. We'll try our best. started as just a way for those of us from the school to get some experience, and then kind of became also a way to get a look at locals or outside talent. But then it also turned into this, I'm trying to think about a phrase, like a point of contention, I suppose, where if you were on the dark matches, but you were one of the students from the school, don't do anything. Keep it simple. But if you were someone from the outside on one of these dark matches, it was much more, let's see what you can do.
Yeah.
Do your thing. And I mean, there were times where that would upset other members of the locker room, when people were doing too much for a dark match. But it there was always this weird like line of, you know, a student, which is a label that got pretty much stuck on you the whole time, you know, can only do so much in a dark match, but an outside person can do pretty much anything and not get in too much trouble. So it was this weird, just this thing that slowly developed over time. And and then also as Ring of Honor started to expand more and more, like the responsibilities of, you know, said graduates of the school and students who were there became bigger and bigger as well. And we went from being able to get out of a building and be at a Denny's by 12:30 to it's now 3 a.m. because we're now, you know, full lighting kit and all that stuff. And then you'd be, you know, wouldn't necessarily have a match because we've got these two other people we want to take a look at, who are going to get a dark match instead of you.
Okay.
But that's the stuff that would come like further and further down the road. So the dark matches himself, a lot of times it was, it's weird because it's less pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's also the desire to take the restrictions that we had. Because a lot of times, I remember Gabe telling us one day that I want to make sure, he's like, if you guys ever end up on TV, you're going to be doing like 5-minute matches.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do on TV. And this is obviously years before Ring of Honor ever had TV.
Yeah.
Like, so I want you guys to be able to have the best 5-minute matches anyone's ever had. So, all right, that's the kind of the idea of what we're being given.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do that. And we'd have little mini feuds in the dark matches. Like myself and Pelly Primo had, like, I don't know, a never-ending dark match feud. And one day it was just like, okay, now you get to be on the main card and wrestle for the top of the Clash Trophy.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And yeah, it was... Oh, yeah, and then at some point during this time frame, you can also tack on now I drive the trucks and I'm in charge of the ring crew.
Oh, jeez.
To my multitasking responsibilities. After I threatened to quit after the first basketball city show.
Yeah. Yeah, so going back to what you said about, like, Punk final chapter and things of that nature, probably one of the most... infamous or famous moments of your career is when CM Punk signed the WWE contract, sorry, on your back at Sign of Dishonor. Oh, sorry.
On the belt. Yep. On the Ring of Honor belt.
The belt on your back at Sign of Dishonor.
Yeah, that was awesome. And I'm curious to this day if I can get royalties from the WWE for the 10 seconds that I am on the Best in the World DVD.
Oh yeah, good point.
I never signed the paperwork that I can remember that signed away my likeness rights to Ring of Honor. So you know, I'm just saying. I think I'm owed like $10 or something. Yeah, that was super cool because I mean that was legit. That was not some random piece of paper made up to look like a con. That was a legit contract being signed in the middle of the ring. And it worked because, you know, I was sitting there. At that point, I had stopped filming at the Nowhere to Run event, which was the night Jimmy Rave and Punk had their cage match. Yeah. That was my last day as a ringside videographer because mm-hmm. I couldn't do it anymore. Like, split my time between, you know, having matches, and it was a financial loss, but I needed to focus on something. So. Mm-hmm. It was cool that I got to this. So then I got to be the ringside guy, like one of the guys the doing the ringside work, which mm-hmm. was something I didn't really get to do because I was always doing something else.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times we're like my fellow, the guys who were in my class would get to accompany Punk to ringside as like his young boys. And I was either filming the show or working the merch table.
Yeah.
So this was like the first time I really got to do that for Ring of Honor show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also the only heel, you know, because by this point I had gone beyond just student, happy to be here, just, you know, having matches. You know, I had started to be a heel.
Yeah.
So it worked for me to come out there and do that, have that moment with him. And that's one of the, especially for the early, you know, few years of Ring of Honor, that's one of those big standout moments. And the fact mm-hmm. that it's I joke about the royalties thing, but it's just the fact that that's you know, forever part of the network, or, you know, the DVD that it's on mm-hmm. for the WWE is it's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like I say, it was one of those moments. It was like, oh, is this real? And then with you confirming it was the actual official WWE contract on the ROH world title, it's such a cool moment. And once again, you've been reading my notes. So winning the ROH Top of the Clash trophy, being the second ever champion and the longest reigning champion. Do you have a favorite moment or match?
Actually, I was the third.
Third?
Actually, yeah, Davey Andrews was first, and then Derek Dempsey, and then me. It started as Gabe putting it up on the news wires that we were gonna do like this mini tournament to crown the first one.
Yeah.
And it was like the first match will take place here. This Davey Andrews will get a bye into the final, into the title trophy match because he was the top graduate of the first class. And then we'll have these other matches to determine who will be there. And then we get to Detroit. And you know, the closest we'd come to my hometown of East Lansing, Michigan, Holt, Michigan, that area. And he just decides like that day that we're going to have the trophy match. Even though he'd announced in the news wires we're going to do this little mini tournament and all this stuff. He's like, we're just going to do it today. And I was like, cool, awesome. This is the showdown in Motown. My then girlfriend, now wife, made the trip with me because we were not going the next day to Vendetta. We were going to stay and visit my family. Mm-hmm. So when I was like, oh, this is perfect. I got new music I'm going to start using this week because it's a main show match. And Gabe loved the music and yelled at me, why didn't you use that from day one? All right. It's Allison Chains, Hate to Feel. If you ever get Rhett Titus to do an interview, I ask him to sing his version of the song for you. And so we had that, and Davey Andrews won the trophy the first time there.
Okay.
And then come Final Battle 2005, Ricky Raz destroys the trophy at the end of the show.
Okay.
Davey quits wrestling. Just, I'm done. I'm out. Okay, bye. Just leaves.
Yeah.
And so early in the next year, we crowned a new one that Derek Dempsey wins it. And then in, so that would be the early 2006. And then in June of 2006, I beat Derek at Destiny, at the Destiny event, to become the third longest reigning. Rhett doesn't count. They just forgot he had it, forgot to defunct it.
I love the fact that when I was introducing you, I said second ever. You didn't correct me.
I didn't catch it that time. Unless you're doing the intro, you know. Let the intro. I'm not going to interrupt the introduction.
It doesn't matter if the intro is complete, you know, not completely correct. Yeah. Just let him do it. It's fine.
Yeah. Third, longest reigning. I like to joke at maybe the shortest match in Ring of Honor history with Bobby Dempsey. Like. But as far as like favorite, I can't remember which Boston show it was. It might be Honor Reclaims Boston. At a really fun match that I really enjoyed with Pelly Primo, where Gabe just gave us time.
Yeah.
You know, instead of like, you got 5 minutes, it was like, you have 8 to 10. It's almost like, what do I do with my hand? Like, what do I do with this time? 3-5 extra minutes? I don't even know what to do with it. But I still remember that being a fun one. And then we had a match in one of the Long Island shows. May have even been Sign of Dishonor, that I really enjoyed. And then we would try matches that were so not like, it's weird that you get to a point where, you know, you know things, but you don't really understand them yet. Yeah, because in 2006, and especially in 2006, Brian Danielson took over the wrestling school.
Yeah.
And he was also my neighbor because where he was living while he was doing the school. So I spent a lot of time with him, a lot of time in the school with him, and it was intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of things to learn, but it was like things that were way above my pay grade at that time.
Yeah.
They didn't really sink in until like later, much later. Probably not till after the point where I wasn't really like full-time wrestling anymore, and I had become more manager and doing indie dates here and there as a wrestler.
Yeah.
So me and Pelly would try doing things that were just Not we weren't we weren't ready for. We had this match in St. Paul, Minnesota, which is a 24-hour truck drive because the truck can't go over like 60 miles an hour. So, and then we tried doing this match based around doing a cording hold. And we're both so tired, so exhausted that neither of us realized just how legit we were putting on the holds until then after the match. And both of us are like, our elbows are like completely useless because we had the holds on each other so stiff. And it was just, yeah. Just, there's some infamous ones in there. The match where I just tried working the ear. Like, yeah, we're just going to work the ear. I think that one's on one of the Buffalo shows. That was like me and Davey Andrews had a match. It was like, let's work the ear. And the finish was like a headlock. Like, all right.
That's fantastic.
I think that was like, with the dark matches. I think that was like, yeah, we had that wiggle room to experiment a little bit and try and figure shit out. Even if we weren't, you know, even if it was like, no, you know, you're not allowed to do top rope moves or anything too super flashy because it's a dark match, but we still had a little bit of wiggle room to create, try and create something with those, you know, 5-6 minutes we were given. And some, you know, they were short, but they were fun like things to be creative with Bobby Dempsey. You know, we did a couple 3 matches to the top of the Clash Trophy, and it was at the point where I was like using these taped up brass knuckle things that Jim Cornette created for me. And just being creative with, all right, how do you hide them again? Like, oh, I now have, you know, brass knuckles in some very uncomfortable places. So I can hide them from the referee. And just it did. It allotted for some creativity and some having some fun with it and really developing a character of sorts. Ring of Honor was, I think Chikara was probably actually the first place I really got to develop character that I wanted. But those, you know, that bled into what I did for Ring of Honor as heel, the pre Adam Pearce Hagedorn and the post Adam Pearce Hagedorn.
Yeah,
there's a very clear delineation in how I did the wrestling, depending on which time frame it was.
The podcast, the honorable mention. Is there anything else that you would like to plug before we finish?
No, that's it. I'm just, you know,
just happy with that.
If you want to give me a follow, I'm on Twitter at Hagedorn Shane. My Facebook's Facebook.com Shane Hagedorn, I think, or Hagedorn Shane, I forget. But I know my Twitter is Hagedorn Shane. So
yeah, interview comes to be, yeah, ladies and gentlemen.
You can see me talk about comic books and wrestling and
all the good stuff.
Random pictures of wrestling t-shirts, like the one I'm wearing now for Joe Gacy. It's my boy. That's it, man. And I greatly appreciate this chance to talk about the wrestlings.
Yeah, like I said, it's worth repeating though. Shane's the first interview we've got, and we've got a lot lined up, which is probably the reason why we're going to carry on the RH review, because we don't want those interviews to go to waste. Took time out of his schedule earlier than expected because I don't know time difference. Yeah, we really appreciate it, Shane. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. So, yeah, for myself, I'm a free-time pro wrestling author. For my first book, which is right here, I have it this time, A Fan's Perspective, One Man's Exploration of British Wrestling. I talk about ROH in the book. I was lucky enough to be at Unified. We've mentioned that on the show. And I was fortunate enough to be in the same hotel as the ROH wrestlers and be at the Liverpool double shot in 2007 to see the very last Samoa Joe match at the time. It was a really cool experience, and including the Nigel McGuinness Jimmy Rave match was crazy. Next up, we have my second book, which I haven't really promoted But this is about the ROH alumni. So we've talked about people who have left ROH and gone, you know, to WWE and stuff. So if you want to, even though it's not about ROH per se, it is about ROH alumni. So if you're wondering what's happened to AJ Styles, Kevin Owens, Samoa Joe, etc., my second book, Fans Perspective 2016, What a Year to Be a Fan of WWE, will fill you in on that. And then my last book, A Fan's Perspective, How My Lifelong Dream Became a Nightmare, is where I go into real detail about Paul London possibly being a main eventer in WWE based on the information I gave in the throwback. And in terms of ROH, I was at the Orlando Double Shot, the Supercard of Honor free show. And that's, and like I said, all three of these books are available on Amazon and paperback and Kindle. Kindle Limited for free. And if you'd like them signed, get in contact with me on my Big Cartel, fansperspective.bigcartel.com. And at Broken But Glorious Wrestling, BBG Wrestling, which me and Stephen are very proud to be a part of too. Yep. We have a partnership with powerslam.tv. You get 6,500 hours of professional wrestling from 140 plus promotions. And you can use the streaming service for a month free on us using the code BROKENFREE. And yeah, enjoy that. Yeah, for BBG Wrestling, like I said before, we have a Twitter, BBG Wrestling, at BBG Wrestling, sorry. Main show is at BBGW Pod, and we have a website, BBGWrestling.com. And for ourselves, you know, our Twitter is at ROH Review, because if you say the ROH Review, you won't be able to find it.
Yeah.
So the Instagram is at ROH Review again. The YouTube is a funny thing that we've got to put in the comments. The email is rohreview@outlook.com for your questions, feedback, comments, and all. That's all good. Much like Adam, get in contact, any of the socials, if you want to send us a question or on the email, that's absolutely fine. And we'll be recording our ROH Free Enterprise review, and that should be out this coming weekend before the show. So before next Sunday, for example. And ROH review episode 15 next Monday. Thank you very much for your support of the ROH review. Bye for now. Bye.